Hello and welcome to the 9th edition of the Touchline Frucker podcast. I'm your host, Lewis, and on this week's show, we will be discussing what makes and defines a person as ready to take over a managerial role, amidst calls for Ryan Giggs to be appointed the new permanent manager of Manchester United. Our guests this week are regulars United supporting Mariah and Arsenal supporting Mickey, as well as two debutants, Arsenal supporter Anton, who you may well know as Ant Lasolk on Twitter, and United supporter Gaz, who goes by Midnight Gaz on Twitter. So let's just jump straight into the main topic. Earlier on in the week, Anton, yourself and Mickey were debating via Twitter over whether Giggs is ready to take over the reins at United on a more permanent role. Just explain your stance.
My point was that the objection to Giggs being given a job was him lacking experience. I have a problem with that on the basis that Ryan Giggs has been playing professional football since 1991, yeah? He's been playing for Manchester United since 1991. He's gone from a left winger to a central midfielder, coach. He's won everything, seen everything, been under the best manager the world has ever seen, yeah? And for people to say he lacks the experience, I just find it laughable. Like, I don't see how anyone can have any more experience than he has. So to say he should go to the championship or something take a year out and study the game more. Like, study what? What is there for Ryan Giggs to pick up? I didn't get it.
Okay, well, Mickey, you were on the other side of the fence. What are your thoughts on what Anton just said?
Well, my thoughts were, you know, no one is dismissing the value of being a top-class player with longevity and working under the best coaches. But there have been other players working under better coaches with better teams for just as long, and they haven't had a candle. Like, they can hold a candle to some of the other top-tier managers, because ultimately there is a difference between having a top-playing ability and top-coaching ability. And yes, whilst Ryan Giggs has been doing some coaching on the side, obviously more so this season prior to the season before, and he was taking his badges. I think he started taking his UEFA B a little while ago, and I think he's currently or has completed his UEFA A. That if you look at all the other top managers that have become top players that have become top managers, is they have had that experience away from the club. They've had to essentially go into the trenches, which isn't something that Ryan Giggs has done yet. So, look, at the end of the day, a coach with top coaching quality and top playing experience will always have the advantage over someone who just has top coaching ability. But there's no evidence to suggest right now that Ryan Giggs as a coach is of the necessary quality to lead Manchester United, which is the biggest team in the world, arguably.
Okay. Moreau, where do you sit on this? I mean, how far does experience as a player go towards, you know, having experiences and becoming a good manager?
You know, for me, there's two sides to it. There's the tactical side and the man management side. And what I've realised is you can't really be a top coach without having a good grasp of both. And obviously, like Ant said, he's been at the top under Fergie and he's been at the club for 20 years. So man management-wise, I think he's got the whole dressing room. Of course, the players are going to be respectful of him and his philosophy, whatever that may be. But then there's a side where I can see where Mickey's coming from, which is the tactical side, which is quite ambiguous. We really don't know what he's about, do we? So it would be a risk, personally. And I feel like for the next appointment, we have to get it right. We have to get 100% right. So at this stage, I wouldn't want to risk it with Ryan Giggs, personally. I think he's been a top player, but managing is just something else, man. Can't compare it for me, personally.
Okay. Gaz.
Hello.
Giggs had like one of the best mentors of all time in Sir Alex Ferguson. Yeah. Did Ryan Giggs ever strike you as a possible managerial candidate or even have managerial qualities, maybe say a few years ago?
If I'm honest, out of all the bunch, the class of 92, as we know what they're called, it was Gary Neville that struck me as that, you know, the leader, the one that would probably become the United manager. However, as years have gone on, I think from my point of view as a United fan, I've gone to City. He's obviously a leader in the room. I think in terms of when Gary Neville wasn't fit, or Vidic wasn't fit, Giggs was the one that got the captain's armband. He's obviously been at the club for however many years now. So I wouldn't say he did that a few years ago, but as years have gone on, he's become more of a leading figure. And obviously, I read an article recently in terms of someone was talking about whether he'd be able to coach in or something like that. I read an article where the players were praising Giggs recently for his coaching sessions, as in compared to what David Moyes was delivering when he was the gaffer. So, I don't know.
I would say, I don't want to cut in, but
go on.
You know, if you're going to use the fact that he's been at Manchester United for X amount of years, he's working as a top coach, he's won all of these things, so has Roy Keane.
100%.
Oh, yeah. Roy Keane wasn't at Manchester United for that level of time.
You wouldn't have that level of time, but he still was at the club during their peak, and he was. And to be honest with you, he showed more of the the human qualities to lead a team. He was more of a leader than Giggs.
Okay, but would you not say the adaption of Ryan Giggs' game is not testament to his tactical knowledge and his football brain? Remember, up until what, say 6-7 years ago, Ryan Giggs was just a great player. Don't get me wrong. A pacey left winger. You never thought you'd see Ryan Giggs dictating football matches from the centre of the park.
No, I agree with you totally.
And he has the intelligence and the knowledge of the game to adapt his game in a way that not many players have. The only thing I remember doing that are him and the other one doesn't really serve my point, but was John Barnes. But there's not many that can do that.
No, I agree with you completely. But again, it goes to the point where, you know, it's about tailoring your individual game and understanding how the game of 11 men work in opposition to another 11 men. I'm not saying that has no value. It does. But for me, it's just not enough.
If someone had turned around and said to me, "I have one more and have proven as a manager," I'd have said, yeah, fair enough. But what I objected to, and I will always object to, is the experience being a factor and taking time out to understand the game more. Those are the points that I objected to. I also looked up, Jurgen Klopp went from being a player at, how do you pronounce it, straight to manager.
Yeah.
Retired and became player, same. So there's proof it does work.
I think either way, there's a risk in terms of who you hire, no matter who you hire. So if you hire Ryan Giggs, there's the risk that he has no experience. But then there's the fact that he knows the club, he knows the league, he knows the players, he's got the players' respect. There's a risk if you hire Van Gaal, he doesn't know the Premiership. So there's a risk, no matter what you do. There's always going to be a risk.
I thought there was going to be a risk, but the thing with, if you're going to use Jurgen Klopp or, let's say, Clarence Seedorf or Pippo Inzaghi Mancini in Italy, the difference is, and I feel pretty confident in saying this, is that they come from very different coaching cultures as opposed to what happens over here. Now,
that's true.
Ferguson is arguably one of the great. I don't think he is the best. I think there's too many managers to say that. But he is arguably one of the greatest club managers of all time. But at the same time, no one can actually say he's one of the best coaches of all time.
He wasn't a coach. He's a manager, though.
Yeah, he delegated that to
essentially, and that's the point.
That makes him the best.
No, but that's the point. Like, if we're going to talk about, bear in mind, I've not dismissed any of Ryan Giggs's man management abilities. I actually think that's probably going to be strength right now. I think the majority of the players, the reason they're kind of rating his coaching so far is because of his man management, not so much the actual sessions. However, my thing is that he has to kind of experience a little bit more in terms of the coaching aspect. Managers from Italy, Spain, Germany, France, Italy, I don't know if I repeated myself just now, but they come from different coaching cultures. And in Manchester United, yes, he was under Ferguson, but Ferguson delegated a lot. And
when you say different coaching cultures, are you purely basing that on how far behind the English game is?
I'm not going to say how far behind. It's just, for me, it's just the approach. I mean, I made the point to you when we were talking about last Saturday in Italy. Doesn't matter what level of the game that you play at, you have to go to university. There's a process. In Germany, you know, you have players taking their badges, not during the twilight of their careers, at the peak of their careers, they're taking their badges. In Holland, for example, I mean, Holland, you know, is probably standard bearer, but you have children that talk tactics at levels that adults in this country don't talk to them about. So, for me, it's not just the implementation of the coaching culture, but it's just even the average fan. And yes, he will have learned a lot from Ferguson, but in terms of his actual coaching, did he learn a lot from Mike Phelan, from Carlos Queiroz, from René Milenstein? Are these the guys that he's watching, or is he just watching Ferguson?
These are the guys he's been working with.
I know, but at the same time, we need to see evidence of that being transformed to the pitch. Now, you can say, okay, it's only been one game, but we usually have an idea of how a coach runs his team or sets up his team. Even from an interview, from a press conference, we start to see the way he speaks about football. And I personally, unless I've missed something, I've not seen anything like that from Ryan Giggs, not just before the Norwich game, but even when he first started taking his badges, which was 2 to 3 years ago. So right now...
As in a playing style, do you mean a playing style of the way he sees the way it should be played? Is that what you mean?
It's just the way
isn't the way a player plays kind of like proof of their playing philosophy, though? Like, you'd never, because if Lee Catmull became a manager tomorrow, none of us would expect him to play like Barcelona-style football, would we?
No, I agree. It could definitely be an indicator. But I've also seen coaches that they said George Graham, when he was playing, he was actually more of a, you know, not, I'm not going to
say flair
player, but he was like a technical player. And then, you know, fast forward 20, 30 years, however long it took for him to start coaching, and 1-0 to the Arsenal all the way. So it depends. Like I said, it could definitely be an indicator.
That was a media thing, though. That's not actually a true reflection of the way Arsenal played at the time. That's a media thing.
Well, I didn't watch it. I'm not going to sit like...
I'm old enough to remember, innit?
I'm not going to dispute on that too much, because I wasn't watching them to that degree at 5 years old. But it can definitely be an indicator. But right now, I think it'll be wiser for them to go with a coach like Van Gaal. And Van Gaal says it himself. He will always hire backroom staff from the current setup.
Didn't Van Gaal run Barca into the ground at one point?
It wasn't Van Gaal's fault. It was, at the time, it was politics. Just like it is right now. Like, the layman will look at Barcelona right now and think it's all Tata Martino's fault. He doesn't know what he's doing. When it's more to do with Sandro Rosell, it's more to do with the fact that the directors are moving away from the Barca ethos. And it was exactly the same, if not worse, during the 90s under Van Gaal. Van Gaal's a volatile figure, but one thing that you can't dispute with Van Gaal, that he leaves great foundations for whoever needs to take over.
He did that with Barca in the 90s.
With Ajax, with Bayern Munich, he always kind of leaves the great foundations. Short term, it may not be great in terms of the success that you want, but I guarantee you that the next 1-2 coaches that take over after him, and if we're talking about Giggs, that's what I think it should be. I think it should take 2 to 3 years, be Van Gaal's understudy, which Van Gaal, I think, would be more than happy to have him be.
What happens if they make Giggs the understudy, and then someone says, oh, Ryan Giggs is available as a manager? They offer Ryan Giggs a job, and he goes, and he's doing well, and Van Gaal keeps, you know,
I'll be very surprised if he did that.
Even if Giggs was to go, if he was to get the wrong offer to him again at another point,
he'll
take it straight away. He'd be on it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah,
Anton, I've got a question for you. I mean, we know that, you know, Wenger, despite what you may think of him or whoever else may think of him, his time at Arsenal is probably going to be coming to an end, if not this season, maybe in 2 years' time. Would your opinion change on Giggs if he was touted as the next Arsenal manager because of his know-how of Manchester United Football Club? Would you say he is ready for the Arsenal job?
You've got me there. I probably wouldn't. I'll be honest. I probably wouldn't. And it's on the basis that I want something different for my club, innit? Like, so I wouldn't want him. I don't want someone. I want a proven winner. Like, as a manager, we can't afford any more experiments. Manchester United can afford experiments and projects.
I don't think they can. That's the thing. To a degree, I don't think they can.
They've had 1 year based on players not respecting a bad appointment. I can't see United being in this situation next year, whoever they put in charge, really and truly.
So would it be fair to say that your definition of a manager being ready probably isn't just reliant on the manager itself, but maybe reliant on the club as well?
What I'm saying is, I think Giggs is ready to be a manager. Whether I'd want him to be Arsenal manager is a different kettle of fish. David Moyes is ready to be a manager. I wouldn't want him to be Arsenal manager.
Would he? But would he be ready to take over to take over from Arsene Wenger?
I just don't understand how he could not be. He's the same same age as a lot of managers. Like, there's managers, what, Villas Boas and that were younger than Giggs is. Do you know what I mean? Like, Rodgers was probably younger than Giggs is when he first got his manager's job. Martinez, Sosa, like, there's a lot of people that were younger than what he is now. Not, and they didn't have half the experiences he had.
Sorry, and it's not the age. Because, yes, Rodgers and Villas Boas didn't have the playing experience being in the actual environment.
Rodgers is a learner of the game. He studies the game.
It's, at the end of the day, he's been a student in the game since he was 15 years old, if we're talking about Villas Boas. You know, Rodgers has been, ever since he got injured, because he was an expert.
I know, but then we're saying student of the game, right? Giggs, do people think footballers
don't... Listen, it's not to say that they don't watch the game. Like, literally, they finish the game, they go home, eat dinner, and then sleep 10 hours, and then rest, and then go training. It's not to say that. But I think the thing is, the culture in England is they forget how studious the modern coach has to be. And there is no way, even for this whole time that Giggs has been playing football, that he would have been studied football to the same extent as, not even, let's not even say Rodgers or Villas Boas, even the normal first team coach at
the
Championship.
Why? Because it's not documented to us. Did you listen to Stan Collymore's driving on Saturday evening?
Stan Collymore,
did you hear the part when he was talking about Sean Dyche?
Yeah,
no, I missed that.
The Burnley manager. I missed that. Sean Dyche, when he was playing, would, after his game, he would watch every game in the league and he would pay attention and he was studying the game. And he had a teammate that was Sean Dyche's best friend. And Sean Dyche would do things like that. Now, we wouldn't know that because that's not documented. Like, there's a lot of good coaches and a lot of good work in this country that, because it's not, doesn't have the continental ring to it and the flair. And I hate this when people like Allardyce come out with comments like, if my name was Allardyce, I'd get more respect and silly lists like that. But there is a small element of truth in it. There's a very small element of truth in it. For example, when Rodgers and Martinez was meant to be up for the Liverpool job at first, people were laughing at the idea of Rodgers. No one was laughing at the idea of Martinez.
I agree with you, but this is the point. That's Sean Dyche. We don't. I just about know who he is. If Ryan Giggs was that kind of student of the game, best believe we would know about it.
And right. Look at take Joey Barton for example. Look at who knew Joey Barton was who he was until Twitter came around. None of us would have had a clue. We just thought he was any fuck.
I agree with you. But listen, this is Ryan Giggs. This guy is a modern day legend in England. Okay. And whatever platform he has, I have a subscription to 442 Magazine, World Soccer. I'm on all kinds of articles and blogs. No. Like, I'm being honest, right? Ryan Giggs always features in these kind of publications. And yes, we do know about the, you know, him taking 1,000 yoga classes so he can prevent injuries, and him taking his UEFA B and going on to his UEFA A licenses and whatnot, right? But I'm only going to speak for myself. I'm not going to say we, but I don't get the impression that he's the student of the game to the point where his playing experience, which is very valuable, no one's discounting that, coupled with his actual studying of the game, those two elements are at the same level where he can go straight into a manager position at Manchester United. And I'm not saying he's not good enough to be a manager anywhere else, but at Manchester United, listen, with Guardiola, it's a similar kind of playing career in a sense that he's playing at the top level at top club for a long time. The difference was that at the age of 20, you had his teammates and his coach saying, this guy's a coach. When he left Barcelona, he went to Brescia. And he went specifically, he could have gone to Juventus, he could have gone to Manchester United, because both of them were after him at the time, right? He went to Brescia because he wanted to learn certain elements of the game. They went to Brescia. And then afterwards, he didn't go to England or to France or to Germany. He went to the Middle East. The Middle East, right? It wasn't for money. He was there to learn different things. Then afterwards, he goes to Mexico, goes to Argentina.
What did he learn about football in the Middle East?
You'll find a lot of these developing countries are either at the same level or way ahead in terms of sports psychology and sports science and sports analytics. They have a lot. We have a lot to learn. I'll tell you that for free. Because they have to compensate for the lack of footballing background in these countries, then they have to make it up in other ways. So in America, you'll find that the culture is actually better than it is in Europe in a lot of ways. So he goes to the Middle East, he goes to Argentina, he goes to Mexico. Now, I'm not saying every up-and-coming manager has to do the same thing, but essentially, you have to come out of your comfort zone to do, like, those were his trenches. He had to go to the trenches to learn something different. So when he comes back and manages the Barcelona B team, he's way ahead of his curve. I'm not saying that's the norm, because like you said earlier, Klopp, he went from player almost straight into management, and he did very well with the Mainz team.
Dalglish as well,
but again, Dalglish, even as a player, he was something else. He wasn't just like Giggs, where he was a wide man and he went to centre mid. He was, you know, he was tactically intelligent, but he had this thing off the pitch where he was a football man. Like, he lived and breathed football. He was a student in the game. He was a coach. You saw it as a player in his peak. He was a coach. So, not to say that Giggs can't go on to become that, but the evidence so far, to me, suggests that he hasn't had that football education in terms of coaching ability, in terms of learning the tactical aspect, the mental aspect, like, you know.
So, Mickey, you know, I mean, go on, Ryan.
What I think is a good thing for Ryan Giggs is the fact that he would be managing in England. I think aside from the big games, tactics aren't as stressed here as they perhaps are in Europe or in the Champions League. So I feel like if he is maybe learning on the job, I wouldn't do it personally, but if he's learning on the job, I think he'll have the man management down pat, because he's been with these guys their whole career, so he knows what they're like. So in that sense, like, even managers like, what's the guy at Crystal Palace? Tony Pulis. I look at the job he's doing, and I wouldn't say he's anyone who's particularly like a tactical whiz or anything. He's a good man manager. He drills his teams well. They're prepared to play who they're facing every week.
I think that's good tactics, surely.
I think that's more the man management, to be honest with you. They're a hard-working team.
All the players love Ian Holloway as a man manager. He'll make you feel like $1 million, but he can't set you out to not get your ass kicked.
I'll be very honest with you. I think your tactic is probably more advanced than he gets credit for.
It's because it's an ugly tactic.
I don't think the style that Crystal Palace play are similar to what we saw at Stoke in his early days. I think there's a big contrast between
the game.
Which is good. I mean, my thing is, let's take away from Ryan Giggs as well, because I want to kind of move on to just the general principle of how do you judge who's ready. And I think football, you know, it's an evolving game, so you can't keep on using the old standards of 10 to 15 to 20 years ago. The current elite managers have such a mixture of ability, and the stakes are higher. So
who are the current elite?
In my opinion, five, six. Pep, Mourinho, Ancelotti, Simeone, Klopp. Did I say Klopp?
No.
Yeah. Top five.
So what's that? Pep, Ancelotti, Mourinho, Klopp, Simeone. So that's your top five.
Currently, right now, over the last three seasons, I would say comfortably top five, yeah.
Interesting.
Hiddink doesn't get in there at all?
No.
Why does Simeone get... Not that I dispute the thought of Simeone, but why does he get in there ahead of someone, maybe Brendan Rodgers, I don't know. Why does he get in there?
He's won a lot of stuff in a short amount of time.
He's, I think, purely that, like, people talk about what Liverpool are achieving right now. It's quality. But what Atletico are doing, you have to understand the place they came from. Like, they were literally, they were down and out, they were a selling club. The hegemony between Barcelona and Real Madrid is unreal. Like, literally unreal. And it's just the fact that they're consistently winning. Ever since he's took over, they're just consistently winning trophies, you know.
They did impress me yesterday as well, because there wasn't just one type of style of play which I saw in them. They were able to counter-attack when they needed to. They were able to retain possession when they needed to. There was different aspects of the game which were necessary, which they displayed yesterday.
Yeah, the only reason, I'm not just saying Simeone, just, you know, because of what they've done yesterday and what they've been doing throughout the season. Like, people forget, he was the guy in charge when Atletico put four past the European champions in Chelsea. Like, light work. Like, they've been doing this for 2 to 3 years. They've been doing it for a while. And for me, Rodgers is more than capable of getting into that elite. However, I'm kind of going over... It's the same way I rate players. I look at consistency over a number of seasons. Okay. And Simeone, alongside Klopp, alongside Pep, Mourinho, and Ancelotti, to a lesser extent, have demonstrated that. So
the thing about Simeone is the fact that, I think I mentioned it yesterday, I want to see what he does in Europe outside Atletico, because you know he played there as well, so he kind of
has
he has a kind of special bond with the club. With the players, he can relate, like, you know what's on the line. And I don't know if he can recreate that kind of passion, that intensity at another club. So yeah, the fact is fully...
Do you know what? It's the same thing I said about Mourinho. Mourinho, for me, for his team to succeed, he has to create an underdog mentality.
Yeah, all the time. Siege mentality, innit?
Yeah, it's a siege mentality. It's the same thing with Simeone throughout the season. Only up until maybe the last month or so, he's always been, we're not favourites. And yeah, you're right. You know, the fact that he was captain after during his playing career, he comes back. They were already underdogs in a sense, so that kind of helps.
Definitely.
But can you go to a team where you are the favourites? Like you are the best team. Can you go on and create?
And those excuses don't wash, sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair,
a Chelsea fan and Jose Mourinho.
I'm gonna start on him.
To be fair to Simeone, though, I'm sure he won a few trophies in Argentina. I don't know who.
Yeah,
I think he won something with River Plate.
Yeah, he took over because he was playing in Argentina, then he went from player to manager straight away. But I don't think he did too well there. Then he went to Italy, and he took over a team in Italy. Didn't
Catania,
do too well there.
I think it was.
Yeah, and then he came to Atletico.
Right.
So, you know...
So he like did said, his schooling...
He's been in
South
the trenches.
America.
Like, all these top... Like, for me, every top manager has been in the trenches.
And the thing with him as well is, obviously, as you guys said before, he's had a couple... Not failures, but he's had a couple unsuccessful tents as a manager. He's learnt that not everything will go your way. He's come to Atletico now, and his team's flourishing, so...
Yeah. Okay. So, Mickey, I mean, at what point would you suggest Ryan Giggs is ready... I know we're going back to Randy's, but
realistically,
you need
him to get tutored, like, directly. And for me, it's just Van Gaal. Like, Van Gaal looks more than like he's going to get appointed. Like, Van Gaal is so influential that people don't realise. Like, you don't need to be the most successful manager to be the most influential. You know, shout out to Marcelo Bielsa. And Van Gaal has schooled a lot of people, like, you know. So wait around, do 2 to 3 years, develop your coaching ability. And then there's after that, for me, there's actually no reason why he can't go on to be a top manager.
So are we certain that Van Gaal would take Ryan Giggs under his wing? Because I did see an article the other day that talks had broken down because he didn't want Ryan Giggs.
There's been contrasting articles, to be fair. Some have said that he's going to be definitely in the ranks. Some have said Van Gaal wants to bring Clive and Co. So
that's what I thought.
He definitely keeps one person from the old regime.
Yeah,
at the club, so there will be someone, and
like at the backroom staff, I don't see who that would be apart from Ryan Giggs.
But would that person? Gone.
Sorry, if it was Paul Scholes' name being touted, would you have the same objection?
Yeah, I'd love Scholes to be manager, but I don't think he has the character for it. I don't think he has the character. The man management, he wouldn't be able to do it.
He looked weird sitting on the bench. He doesn't.
Actually, look, Scholes is a bit more of a, like, he's a bit more in his head. He's far ahead.
Yeah, like, because you know what?
He's just biased, man, because Scholes is a little pretty player, man. This is
unfair. That's what you want. Lewis, have either of you read Dennis Bergkamp's book?
Yeah.
Right, so you've read it, right? So you can see the level of which he thinks about football.
Yeah.
For me, he strikes me more of as a coach, as opposed to a coach and a manager, like that combination.
Yeah.
And for me, that's the feeling I get from Paul Scholes. I think one-on-one...
More of a teacher.
As I mentioned to United, I wouldn't want to be coached by anyone else but him.
I would want to learn from him 100%.
Yeah, 100%.
But Scholes!
Yeah. Of course. But we're talking about that combination, and that's my point about Ryan Giggs. It's just that they have the best of both worlds.
So why can't Ryan Giggs be a manager who has good coaches around him?
He could, but... Like I said, top managers, especially a team like Manchester United, it's not like it was in the 90s or early 2000s anymore. You need... Because the thing is, even backroom staff are as qualified or not more qualified than managers.
Yeah.
Like, nowadays, they're master's level, degree level, they've done their pro license, they've coached in different countries, they've learned different languages, they're constant student in the games, right? They're not just going to coach or listen to someone who just hasn't done it all. The reason that a guy like Mourinho or Guardiola or Rodgers or Martinez and Klopp and all of these guys command that respect is because they've been in the trenches. They have done, essentially, they've been in the mailroom.
Hmm.
They've been in the mail room. They've done the grind. They've fetched coffees. They've done all of that, in figuratively speaking. And that's what the current modern soccer coach, or football coach, sorry, that's me talking that foreign stuff. That's what they've had to do, and that's what's required. And, you know,
There's exceptions to every rule, though. Someone breaks every mold.
I agree with you completely. But
so, yeah, go on, Mickey.
No, go on.
So, Ant, you think specifically for this Man United job, Giggs is ready, yeah? Not that you think he's ready to go out there, but just because of the experience he has at the club, etc., yeah?
Say that again, Ant. You're cutting out.
The way the fans are down, the club is down, the players are down, I just think you give it to Giggs, it just gives the whole place an instant lift. I don't think you can put a price on things like that. Like, take Brendan Rodgers, for example. Brendan Rodgers has made a lot of players that a year ago were classed as average players look like world beaters this year.
Yeah.
Just the lift that a manager can give certain players. You don't know the levels it can push them onto. Yeah. You don't look at the difference in Dzeko under Pellegrini to Mancini. Just things like that. I think Giggs could have.
But how long can you get by on the buzz, though? Eventually, you're going to get found out, man. Like, always, like, with a fraud. If you ain't got it, you'll eventually get found out, man. The buzz can only last so long.
And to be fair of you...
Does he not pick that up in that time? Like, there's going to be an element...
Wait, one second. You're, like, cutting out a bit.
Does he not gain the experience that people are saying he needs to learn?
I that's a fair point, but my thing is, I look at other examples that seem to be working much better, and it seems to give more security and it gives the person an opportunity to learn. Look at Zinedine Zidane right now. Real Madrid are in a massive rut. They're in a massive rut, and I'm not saying not to the extent of Manchester United, but going off what happened with Mourinho the previous season, they got someone that was experienced that could accommodate the team and accommodate the players, and obviously deliver on the chairman's wishes, but I also gave someone with relatively little coaching experience the chance to develop. And now there's talks of Zidane taking over another team, and that's just after one season.
Surprised I don't hear Zidane touted with more jobs.
I'm very surprised about that.
To the point I even forgot he was at Madrid.
But that's the thing. But even Zidane, like, he's already had a couple of seasons of dedicated coaching time with De Castilla. He's in. I would assume even in his work as an ambassador, you would have experiences in different footballing environments and different cultures, and those things matter. So even for him, those are quote unquote his trenches that he's worked on, and that's why he hasn't. Maybe that's the reason he hasn't gone straight into management himself.
Okay, you know, so guys, let's do a little. Sorry, go on.
No. Go on. It's fine.
All right. What I was going to say is, let's do a little exercise. I mean, do you reckon you could pick out players who are in today's game who not coming towards the end of their careers but who are probably maybe in their peak and maybe do a little prediction game and sort of, you know, say who would be managerial material at this point in time? I mean, is there anybody that sticks out right now to anybody?
Xavi Hernandez.
Yeah, but
Xavi's a bait one, though.
But I think Xavi's a bait one, yeah, but I'm talking about players who are at their peak.
Because he's an intelligent player.
Yeah.
And we'd all say the same names.
Yeah, he'd only come up playing the philosophy that he's played under anyway, because that's what he believes in as a player anyway. Like, if you transfer it for, like, the Barca kind of guys, the Spaniards, the deep midfielders, there's certain players that just come into mind straight away, man.
I think another bait one, actually, Philipp Lahm. I think it's more obvious.
I think if you're German, you're just basically, you know, it just comes with the territory.
Yeah, I think Van Persie would be a good coach.
No.
Don't know if he'd be a good manager, but I think he'd be a good coach.
A good coach, yeah.
You're saying technical players. Like, it's such a bias, yeah? Like, it's just an assumption. And this is what I said, the assumption is based purely on the way players play football. Because you're still seeing Giggs as that winger, that's why you're not...
This is the pattern. The players that we've named so far, these are players that you're going to say, okay, it's documented, other players don't get the same kind of coverage. But these are the players that whenever they're interviewed, they don't just talk about their position or, you know, what they do. They talk about the game in a holistic sense. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, even players like... Let me think of someone else. Like, for me, yes, they may be all technical players, but again, think about where these players come from in terms of their background and the culture of that background. You know, there's not many English players that you can say the same thing of. And there's a reason for that. Like, for me, I don't know if you know about this, right? But the FA in this country, they've not even created a course for talent development. So that means essentially scouts and people that go out to go pick players and to see who's going to have to get to development centres and academies and whatnot. Not to say that these are guys just off the street. Yes, they may have their coaching badges and whatnot, but
effectively they are. A lot of scouts pick up kids that score the most goals in the game. I've seen my son have nightmares on the pitch, but score three, and I have two scouts come up to me. I've seen him have worldies, and where he didn't score, no one said anything. Like, I've seen it with my own eyes, with my own child.
Right, exactly. And that's what I mean. It's just like, if you look at that in terms of how it was before, because right now the FA are making changes, but if you're looking at that, if you look at how much youth coaches, and I'm talking from first-hand experience, how little they get paid, then that tells you how they really value coaches in this country. So go to anywhere else and listen, I'll give you a perfect example, right? I work for Fulham. So I also work at the foundation. What we do commercial tours. We had an academy come over from Canada, right? So under 15s, under 16s, under 17s. And I've never had this before, right? Maybe I tend to coach bad youths, right? First thing they do, they get changed. They come in. Every single one of them came in, gave me a handshake. Hello, coach. Good morning, coach. Hello, coach. Ready to play, right? Whenever any coaches that I've spoken to, when they're coaching women, their approach to the game is so much different. The way that they actually want to learn, they want to develop their technique and whatnot.
Because their ability might not be there as high as the males, they want to learn.
In England, we're incredibly passionate about football. You know, not to take anything away from that, but the way we approach coaching culture is so different. And that's my point. Like, we don't even hear British-based players really talk about it to that level. We don't even talk about how they play, just talking about it. So...
Do we respect it if they do? We've got a real fascination with everything foreign here, like with regards to football. Like, we respect everything foreign so much more than we respect our own. Like, we're all still in love with the Dutch way of football. A Dutch team hasn't done anything in Europe for how long? The Dutch national team has never won the World Cup, but we're in love with
football. But then again, it depends.
But at the same time, how successful has Dutch football been?
No, but that's the way that you measure success. We're in a culture where we only judge success on winning tournaments, which is obviously the first indicator. Don't get me wrong.
It's not only, but it's got to play a part.
Of course. But at the same time, they have won tournaments. You know, they've got... It may only be one. They're two-time finalists.
Euro 1988.
Sorry. 88. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So, but... It's the same thing I said in terms of...
Is that good enough for the country that has the reputation that Holland has in World
Cup? No, but I'm using... I'm going to go back to the principle I use in terms of the most influential coaches. Sometimes the best coaches aren't the ones that win the most. Going back to my point. In terms of the tiki-taka coaches, right? Their biggest philosophy... Their biggest influence is Marcelo Bielsa. What major trophies has Marcelo Bielsa won in Europe? None. But all the top coaches currently who subscribe to that particular possession-based philosophy will swear by him. And that's my point.
Yesterday, he was Argentina manager, yeah?
Yeah, he was at one point, yeah.
When was he Argentina manager?
A while ago. I think
Was he in charge when they won the World Cup in 86? Was that him?
No.
When was he in charge of Argentina? I'm going to go with early 2000s, early to mid-2000s.
He's an odd man manager. His squad's kind of... He's a weird guy. He's insane.
But the point was, his influence is... You can't doubt his influence. in terms of all the current managers that subscribe to his philosophy. And that's my point. Yes, the Dutch, or you could use France as an example. You know, even Germany, even though they haven't won something major since 1996, if I remember correctly, 1996, yeah. But it's not just the tactical aspect, because to win a tournament, the main reason the Dutch haven't won anything in years is because, essentially, they're mentally weak. Nothing to do with the footballing ability or the tactical ability. It's just the fact that there's a lot of infighting. It's more to do with psychological and, you know, social aspects, more to do with the actual coaching itself. So, just because...
I don't know. Other than Van Persie, do Holland have a world-class player in the world right now?
Arjen Robben is a world-class?
Pardon?
I would say Schneider's nowhere near that level anymore. I want to say he's world class. Holland don't have many world class players, but to be fair with you, they have very, 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 very good players that, as a unit, if the last World Cup is to show anything, you know, could do something. Rafael, and they have had a lot of players that didn't fulfil their potential. They have world class potential but didn't fulfil it. Rafael van der Vaart was equally as good as Schneider.
Yeah, he was better.
Yeah, he was better than Schneider.
To be honest, with their current crop of players coming up now, the youngsters, they've got a lot of potential world class players in there. Marco van Ginkel is another one. But who knows?
All right. Well, guys, let's leave it there. In terms of the main topic, does anybody have like any listeners' questions we can quickly run through?
I have one.
Yeah.
This is a good one. I want to kind of get your opinions on this one. It was from Aluminium Scripto. That's what I'm going to call him because I have no idea how to pronounce the first part of his name.
He described it last week. He said it was like a Latin word for knowledge or something, I think.
Yeah, he went to private school. essentially, he asked, after Bayern's defeat to Real Madrid and after Atletico defeating Chelsea, sorry, is tiki-taka football dead?
Nah, not for me. It's too easy to say that based on one or two results. That's too easy to say it's dead. Football goes in, I've noticed it goes in cycles in terms of a copy. Tiki-taka wasn't really dominant until Barca really imprinted it on world football. It just goes through cycles, man. That's the way I see it. It will be back when it just depends on the way it's implemented by the players and the manager.
I think it needs an evolution.
Yeah, because I was just about to say that.
Like with every system in football, teams become aware of it and they figure a way how to handle it and how to beat it.
Yeah, you get found out.
Yeah, so it hasn't. It's like it's come to the level where, right, we're going to do this, and other teams have realised, right, this is what beats that, and the tiki-taka style hasn't found a way to counteract the problems it faces yet. But it will in time. I'm not saying I don't think it's dead by any way, stretch or form, but it needs tweaking. The same with anything.
I mean, to say it's dead is a bit knee-jerk, to say the least, because two tiki-taka teams have made the Champions League semi-finals this year, so two out of the best four.
My feeling on this is the fact that with Barcelona's domination, when any team dominates, they become public enemy number one. When any team dominates anyway, it doesn't matter what style of football they play. But I think because the fact that it breeded kind of quote-unquote over-sophisticated players and coaches, and there was a sense of kind of superiority, and I think the average fan didn't like that. The average supporter didn't like that, and I think it's kind of a rebuttal to that. And it's going to get to a point where, like you said, it's going to get tweaked. It's going to start dominating, and everyone's going to fall back in love with it. And that no system is flawless. Every system has its flaws. What I will say is this, though, because I don't want to always sit on the fence, and I think something that we've spoken about with the podcast is it seems a bit too friendly, is the fact that if you look at all the greatest teams, the most heralded teams of all time, they've all played a variant of tiki-taka football. I think if you look at the Dutch team of the 70s, obviously Ajax, if you look at this current Spanish team, if you look at the Liverpool team of the 80s, to an extent, they didn't play tiki-taka as such, but they played a possession-based
game. Nah, that's a false label. Look, chances are the better teams are going to have more of the ball. So to say it's not based purely on possession. Like, the better teams are normally going to have more of the ball. that Liverpool team,
and we caught about 10% of what you said.
What about now?
It's better now.
I'm saying I don't think that Liverpool team was. I think that the beauty of football is that there's so many different styles
100%.
That work. Yeah, and we like them in different eras and at different stages.
I agree with you. I just think that even if it's not tiki-taka as such, because, you know, possession-based game doesn't equal tiki-taka. There's very specific variables to tiki-taka football outside of passing the ball around. But I just think that we're talking about teams that are proactive and teams that are reactive. And the proactive teams are always the more heralded ones, and that's for a reason.
Would you put any of the Brazil teams under that label?
I'll put them as a possession-based team because they want the ball. That's my thing. I don't like to say that possession-based teams are attacking teams, because whether you're possession-based or non-possession-based, equally you could be attacking and equally defensive on each side of the spectrum. But what I will say is this, though, that I do think that it takes more talented players, individuals, and it makes the game look better when you have a team that is possession-based. You can't have a team of machines and make it a possession-based team. I think it takes more talented players to make tiki-taka football work than it would for a reactive team.
Okay. What do you, I want to ask a quick question.
Go on.
I don't know if you guys saw some comments that came out from Jose recently. It was a book, and Jose's basically talking about possession.
Oh, yeah, I did see it, yeah.
And he's made a couple comments. I'll read a few of them out. He said, "The game is won by the team who commits the fewest errors. Football favours whoever provokes more errors in opposition. Away from home, instead of trying to be superior to the opposition, it's better to encourage their mistakes. Whoever renounces possession reduces the possibility of making mistakes." So basically, he's trying to say it's better to let the opposition have the ball,
so they make more mistakes.
What do you guys think of that?
I completely agree with that.
I am not going to lie to you. That disgusts me.
Yeah, me as well. I'm not going to lie. That's proper anti-football. I can't get with that.
But it makes sense to me.
I don't.
It makes sense.
I understand the logic. I just don't like the theory.
No. It's a bit anti-football, of course. But I can't argue with the logic.
Anti-football. My thing is, the reason that disgusts me is essentially is because that's very distrusting of the quality of your players.
Mm.
Yeah.
And this isn't a guy. He didn't say this when he was at Porto. These experts are from Real Madrid, the most expensively assembled team of all time. He's essentially telling you guys, I don't trust you with the ball.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And that's my point. I would probably subscribe to that kind of philosophy if I had less able players. That's my thing. I will never ever go to...
Even with a club like Chelsea, I think...
It's ridiculous.
Jose's made some pathetic excuses this season. That little horse thing is outrageous.
He was working with the likes of Luka Modric, Xabi Alonso, Di Maria. I don't see
Mesut Ozil.
That doesn't make sense to me personally. I just wanted to know what you guys thought of it.
The thing about Jose Mourinho for me is that I feel his character, basically, he's a winner, he's a leader. And when I talk about him, I see him as a guy who could have done whatever he wanted in this world. He could have gone into business, he could have opened a corner shop, anything, and he would have been successful at it because he puts that much work in. Mm. I think he just chose to be a football manager. And when you see the way he plays and the things he says, it's just like, where is your joy in it? Like there's a reason Barca are so heralded. It's because the football they won, but the football was attractive as well. And
you see with Mourinho, yeah?
Yeah.
The image he gives outside doesn't seem to be the same image that his players have of him.
I think these players love him completely.
I think a lot of what he says in the media is not what he really truly believes. Like, I think he plays a game that was very clever. I'm not going to lie, it's not very boring. But I just think that he plays a game with us, and some of the things because he doesn't really.
My thing is, like I said, that's all well and good when you're facing Barcelona, who will bop any team to death. That's fine. But listen, man, you're playing Sunderland at home. Are you serious?
Mm.
Are you serious right now?
Like, I saw it coming. Like, he was never comfortable with, you know, playing expansive, beautiful free-throwing football. And he shouldn't, like, that's his philosophy. He shouldn't have to feel comfortable with it. I read somewhere that it was after the Sunderland League Cup defeat. I thought it was after they lost to Stoke. But I think it was a Sunderland game where he essentially said, listen, we're going to go back to basics. 1-0 wins are easy to do. That's what we're going to start doing.
Yeah, because they were stuck on 2-3 goals a game. That's why.
But that's his style.
That's the absolutely guy, fine.
Yeah, go on, in pre-season, there was an article about Chelsea building a Ferrari and giving it to Mourinho for Pep, but ending up with Mourinho who builds tanks. And how the Chelsea squad is a confliction of his style. So I think what he tried to do it their way, and it doesn't work for him. And when you try something that isn't your style, the second it goes wrong, you say, right, that's the problem. I'm going to go back to my way. And that's what he's done.
The testament is
the City, the Liverpool games, where his style has been proven. It's worked.
It works, but that's like, for me, that kind of mentality, that kind of minimising our errors, maximising theirs, that's absolutely fine when you're the less, like, you're the underdog. But a lot of the time, he applies his logic when you're not the underdog. And do you know what people, especially Chelsea fans, are like, you know, watch when you get a striker, watch when you get a striker. A lot of these games, it has nothing to do with your striker.
Yeah.
Because look at the way you set up. I wouldn't want to be a striker playing for Chelsea. You didn't get the chances created for them.
I know, look at Madrid. It was awful watching Torres just chase down
a
£50 million striker, and he was just chasing balls down the channels.
No chance whatsoever. Right? When people get defensive, they're like, okay, what do you expect to do? Play open football? We're not Arsenal. I'm like, listen, you do know you can play cautious, conservative football, but still build attacks.
They've got quality players in their ranks. They've got the likes of Oscar, Hazard, Willian. Schürrle to a degree. There's players there who are able to create chances for their strikers.
Real Madrid did two games in a row. They did. Listen, they were playing the same in terms of the areas. They were just as deep as Chelsea play.
Yeah,
the defensive midfielders Modric and Alonso were doing just as much defensive work. But lo and behold, they still managed to put together proper counter attacks. I didn't watch the second leg of the Atletico Madrid game in its entirety, but the first leg and the Liverpool game, literally leaving your striker on there by himself, 50-yard gaps between him and the midfield.
Mm.
Boy.
I know. I mean, Torres gets a lot of stick, but Jesus.
Rightly so as well, to be fair.
Yeah, rightly so. But like, he doesn't stand a chance.
But it's just, for me, it's a thing where I think people are starting to realise how special DJ Drogba was. Because no other striker, let me think for 2 seconds, no other striker since he's taken over after 2004, 2005 has been able to really flourish.
Yeah.
You know, so for me,
he suits that way of Jose playing to perfection.
Yeah. I think it's a case of, yes, there's strikers that can get out there.
Sorry, and you're cutting out.
Why did he get rid of Lukaku then? If that's what he wanted,
Lukaku isn't the same animal.
No, he's not. But he's got the potential to be. Like, Jose is getting away with making excuses for things that are of his own doing.
Do you guys think Lukaku can make the grade at Chelsea?
I don't think he's good enough personally, but
currently, no, I don't.
I think Diego Costa is a better shot for them.
For me, it's not so much. It's at Chelsea. I just think it's the fact it's Mourinho. I don't really see young attacking players really developing. You know, if it's a fullback, a guy
surely
like
Hazard has come on leaps and bounds under Mourinho, has he not?
Really? You think?
But I think with Hazard,
he's had a much better season this season than last season.
I think with Hazard, it's more the mental and his approach to the game. The ability with Hazard's always been there. They've been touting this guy since he was 17. But I think Jose Mourinho's got him focused and on his job, and that's the difference.
He's got him playing, for me, he's got him playing no different to the way Arjen Robben was playing when he was playing well at Chelsea. He'll be productive, he'll be playing very well, don't get me wrong, but in terms of his technical and tactical ability, for me, there's no difference to what he's doing now to what he was doing at Lille. No difference.
Yeah. And I think yesterday...
I didn't see him much at Lille to have an opinion.
I mean, we saw him yesterday. I mean, he was sort of like in charge of tracking wingers.
I don't think he was fit yesterday, personally, but...
Yeah, he was a fit, yeah. I mean,
it just didn't look right, did it? It looked like when Arsenal had Ozil trying to play left-back, sort of thing. Yeah.
To be honest, I hate that whole thing of these players tracking back and doing defensive. I proper hate it.
That's a reason, apparently, I heard why Ben Arthur hasn't really featured at Newcastle. A lot of the players don't like the fact he doesn't track back. The fact he doesn't work hard. I think he's a good enough player to affect the game. He should be playing every week. He should be playing every single week. He's their best player by a mile. Mm. That's my opinion.
Okay, guys, any other questions before we wrap it up quickly?
A guy asked me one, or I think he asked all of us one. It's about players celebrating versus their old clubs.
Like, I saw that.
Didn't celebrate last night, apparently.
Yeah, I saw that. So, thoughts on...
I think they made a big deal out of it in terms of... If he doesn't want to celebrate, then he doesn't want to celebrate. I think the commentators and the pundits yesterday made a big deal out of it for no reason.
I understand it when it's your club, as in your actual club, like Torres is a Madrid boy, I get that. But when it's players like, I play in the Premier League, and we had a player that about a month ago, he scored and he didn't celebrate against the club he was at for 3 games. Yeah? And I caved him on Twitter because like, it's just pathetic, isn't it? You're just looking for fake love. Like, if I'm first celebrating against Arsenal and people are like, how can he celebrate? I'm like, why wouldn't he celebrate?
No, I still don't think Van Persie should have celebrated. But
I can understand. Should have celebrated. We've been caning him for 18 months.
No, I just.
You gave him dogs abuse. To be fair, I don't see why.
Yeah, of course he should celebrate.
I will be on this podcast for an hour discussing why Van Persie shouldn't be celebrating.
Well, give us a brief indication.
I'm not even going to get into it. But I agree that it gets ridiculous because you have people like was it Houlihan who didn't celebrate this season. Because he was going to join the team and it didn't go through, so he chose not to celebrate scoring against them. I mean, it just gets ridiculous now, doesn't it? I mean, players feel like they owe... I just don't get it. I think it's
specifically the relationship with the fans. If the player's got a good relationship with the fans, or you come back to your old club and the fans aren't caning you or they're not chatting shit about you, then yeah, that makes sense for you to not celebrate. But if you're playing the fans and they're swearing at you all match, dissing you, cussing your mum, cussing your wife, of course you're going to celebrate like a madman. That makes perfect sense.
I don't think he would have celebrated the way he did, I think, with Old Trafford if he didn't get the abuse that he was getting.
Well, I agree, man. That was anger. There was anger in that celebration.
Of course. Can you not understand why there was anger?
So what? Is he supposed to be the bigger man or something?
What right have we got to be angry at him? Sorry. I don't get what right I have to be angry at him.
What, the fact that he was injured for... how many years, and the first season he's fit, he chooses to jump ship.
It was the first season he was fully fit for a whole season.
Like them fat guys that sit at the Emirates just insulting everyone. Like, it's not true. Van Persie did his service for Arsenal.
He never.
He did. He was there for 8 years.
And how many full seasons did he have, Ant?
Playing on the wing for Adebayor and Eduardo. Like, he did his job. Yeah, and he did two seasons where he was our main man. Yeah, and we made 24 million out of him.
No. It doesn't sit right well with me anyway. Like,
well, I think he's a cunt. Not be challenging for fourth. Yeah, they shouldn't.
And he proved it. He won. Obviously, we've not had the best of seasons this season, to be fair. But last season, he won the league. So
justified his move. Every player that's left Arsenal...
Oh, of course it justifies his move. Of course it justifies... I'm never going to sit here and tell you he wasn't justified leaving. I'm just saying, I think...
You didn't want him to. You wanted him to show, I love Arsenal Football Club.
I wanted him to show an ounce of loyalty. That's all I wanted to show.
He showed plenty of loyalty.
He never showed loyalty. He never showed loyalty.
He carried us for
He stayed at a club because he had nowhere else to go.
You think Man United tried to buy him about 4 years ago?
Did they?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about that one.
Fergie tried to buy him about 4 years ago, and Wenger weren't having it. Like, people have been on Van Persie from day.
I've read Fergie's book. Fergie never mentioned anything about that.
He didn't say every transfer he ever went in for.
He had an entire chapter on Van Persie.
There was loads of speculation about him going Man United about 4 years ago.
What I would say is fans have this feeling like players owe the club something, and you kind of have to...
No, owe the club. Nothing. I'm not even talking about the fans. Van Persie owed us nothing. He owed Wenger and the club something. That's all I'm saying.
Wenger didn't keep him there for fun, you know. Wenger kept him there because he knows if he's a good player.
Of course, but
Wenger
was the one that took all the risks on him. Wenger was the one who took all the risks on him.
If he wasn't the player he was, if he was, I don't know, to give it a the defender, he'd ship him out because he's not good enough.
That doesn't matter, but that's besides the point.
His ability is why they want him. Everyone is a commodity to somebody else.
Yeah, but Wenger still showed the faith in him. Wenger still showed the faith in him. He could have shipped him out ages ago when he was injured. It's the same as Diaby. If Diaby was to have a mammoth season next season and then join Man City...
No, that would be a bit ridiculous.
But it's the same principle to Van Persie, because you lot are going on like...
That's completely different.
Van Persie played... How many games did Van Persie play for Arsenal in 8 years?
Van Persie is Arsenal... I think he's in our top 10 goal scorers of all time. You know that, right?
In 8 years?
He's in our top 10 goal scorers of all time.
Theo Walcott's going to be in our top goal scorers soon.
Two seasons he was our main man.
Come on.
Two and a half seasons. When he came back in December and he scored 18 from the January to the end of the season, the next season he got 30, and then the next season he got 30 again.
Let me be honest, innit? At the end of the day, if I'm Van Persie, I have obviously been looked after because I've not played an X amount of time because of various injuries, innit? But I'm 28, going on 29. So... I'm only going to be at my peak for a maximum of 2 to 3 years, all right? That's provided I don't get any more injuries. Now, I've continuously seeked reassurances that Arsenal are going to start purchasing, you know, start moving in the right direction.
But I think they did. The season that they signed him, they signed Kazula, Podolski, and you could say Giroud. Giroud probably wouldn't have come. But I reckon if we had Van Persie last season, we would have been up there.
Just to finish, right? For me, it's a thing where I think if we had shown more, and for me, just signing Carzola and Podolski isn't enough, because for me, it's not just the personnel. It's also seeing the different ways we handle injuries and tactics and stuff. You know, they see more than us, right? And so someone like Van Persie, like I said, he's tactically adept. If he's not seeing enough, he can't just rely on sentiment. Because guess what? Yes, they might have, you know, been patient with me, but my career's finishing at the top level in the next 3 to 5 years. Arsenal Football Club has been going on for ages.
It's time to get rid of me. They won't wait a second.
We're talking about Arsene Wenger here. We're not talking about Arsenal Football Club as an establishment. We're talking about Wenger.
Why Arsene Wenger kept him, though? He did it for his own benefit. He didn't do it out of charity.
If Lionel Messi had come available on the same day that Van Persie said he wanted to leave, and us Arsenal fans would have said, do you want to keep Van Persie or do you want Messi? Which one? What would you have said?
Of course Messi, but that is so unrealistic.
There you go, so we ain't no better. So why do we deserve any different?
Because I'm talking about the loyalty he needed to show to Wenger.
It's loyalty based on the fact that, listen, he is one of the best strikers in the world.
And Wenger knew that. That's exactly why he kept him, Lewis.
Sorry to cut you. If that same guy was Francis Jeffers,
he's gone.
Remember who gave Van Persie the platform? Because Van Persie was not the same sort of player that he was in 2004 when we signed him.
It's a combination of both. Wenger obviously gave him the opportunity at Arsenal, but his ability was always there.
Based on his ability. If he weren't a good player, Wenger wouldn't have looked at him. Like, Van Persie wasn't a joke.
Of course, but you're underplaying the other factors that Wenger had in Van Persie's development.
Now, for me, the thing is, at the end of the day, Van Persie... He always had talent, but it was the mental aspect and the injuries in it. So there was a chance that Wenger took with him anyway. No one is disputing that. But ultimately, it comes down to his ability. Ultimately. No one's ignoring the other variables.
Yeah, but then... that no players should show any manager loyalty because they're only there because they're a commodity, they're a player. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's just the fact that you have to look at also the other variables, such as his age.
Yeah.
Such as, okay...
Yeah, that's fair enough.
How likely are Arsenal supposed to compete at the top level? Because it's not just the league.
Obviously, I understand why he left. But I'm saying that he could have showed And in my opinion, he should have showed maybe a little bit more loyalty.
So you're saying he should have stayed for another year?
I think he should have stayed another year.
Finished fourth again.
Well, we don't know, do we? Because
we don't know
because last season the only thing we lacked, in my opinion, was goals. We lacked goals last season.
What?
We did. Oh my god, we lacked
the
goals.
Only thing?
It was one of our poorest attacking sides I've ever seen.
I agree. With
under Wenger,
we scored more last season than we did this season before with Van Persie. Exactly.
Sorry.
We scored more last season than we did.
Yeah, because Van Persie was scoring them. Van Persie got about 40 goals last season, the season before, when he left.
But we scored more. But after he left, we scored more the last season than we did the season he was there.
We scored more when?
We scored more last season without him.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
So we didn't lack goals.
All right, I'm confused. But what I'm saying is would you lot not agree that last season was one of the poorest attacking sides we've ever seen under Wenger? Regardless of the amount of goals we scored.
Guys, I'm on 1% and my charger's not cooperating with me right now.
Isn't enough.
My charger's just not cooperating, innit? It's giving up on me, innit?
Alright, well, we're going to leave it there anyway. I think, an hour's gone, so we should probably wrap it up. Thanks for joining us today, guys. Thank you to all the panelists and stuff. Catch us on iTunes and YouTube. Look on our website for some new articles. An article got published this week, so check that out. And also get in touch with me if you want to post any articles as well. But yeah, thank you guys. I'll see you next week.
Can I say one last thing?
Go on.
Kieran Gibbs needs to be England's number one left back. In it.
Let the church say amen. Okay. All right. Later on, guys. Bye.